Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Our skin's relationship with the sun is, even now, trickier and more dangerous than you might think. We put a lot of faith in bottles of sunscreen. This week, after more than 30 years of contemplation, the FDA released new rules for sunscreen, targeting bogus claims like waterproof and sunblock, requiring broader protection from UV rays, raising questions about an SPF over 50. This stuff matters. Over 2 million Americans are diagnosed with skin cancer every year. One dies almost every hour. Melanoma rates are headed up, especially among young women. This hour on Point, we'll look at the latest on skin, sunscreen, and the sun. You can join the conversation. Do you know what's in the bottle, the spray? Do you know what it takes to be safe? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Gardner Harris, public health reporter for the New York Times. Gardner, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So give us the big three or so steps that the FDA took this week.
Well, the FDA has been considering these rules on sunscreen since, as I said in the story, Boogie Oogie Oogie was a big hit on the radio.
1978 or something.
That's right.
My goodness.
And, you know, it's been since then that essentially people realized that there was a whole other part of the solar spectrum that we should be worried about, you know, the UVA part of the spectrum. The burning that hits your skin is from the UVB part of the spectrum, and sunscreens have always done a fairly good job weeding out that part of the spectrum. You know, when you get an SPF of 15 or higher, that's the part of the spectrum that the sunscreen is targeting. But the UVA part of the spectrum, it turns out, not only leads to early aging and wrinkling in your skin, but also causes skin cancer. So it has sort of increasingly been part of the concern. And this is also something, by the way, that happens in sunglasses. You want to make sure that when you get dark sunglasses that they filter out the UVA part of the spectrum.
So what will be required when these new rules go into effect? I guess it's next summer, Gardner, on this front.
That's right. Well, basically, the FDA had been thinking about having a sort of a separate measuring scale for UVA. So you were going to have to look for your SPF for the UVB part, you know, the 15 or higher, and then you were going to have to look for a star indication, one star or four stars for UVA. And the FDA was inundated with complaints saying that this was going to be confusing. So they just chucked that whole idea and basically said that, you know, if for manufacturers, they have to make their sunscreen on the UVA side just as strong as it is on the UVB side. So if you get a 15 SPF on the UVB side, you can be assured, if it says broad spectrum protection on it, that it's just as protective on the UVA side. So basically, from here on out, as long as it says on the bottle broad spectrum, don't worry about UVA. You will be just as protected on that side as you are on the burning UVB side just by that SPF number. So just pay attention to the SPF number and the words broad spectrum.
And that goes into effect a year from now, essentially.
Yes, sir. In the meantime, if you go to your local CVS or Rite Aid, and you, first of all, you're going to be confronted with dozens and sometimes hundreds of bottles, many of which right now have frankly false claims on their label. They'll say that they're waterproof. Nothing is waterproof. They'll say that they're sweatproof. Nothing is sweatproof. So what you really need to do, dermatologists tell me, is look for a bottle with between 30 and 50 SPF, as you mentioned at the lead.
Yep.
Anything more than that, and you don't want, and we can talk about why. Always look for something that is water resistant, as one dermatologist said to me. If it's not water resistant, you're essentially pouring the stuff down the drain. And then use a lot of it. You know, to cover your whole body, you need to use 1 ounce. You know,
golf ball sized glob. That's a lot. That's really smearing it on.
It is. Now, that's for, you know, covering your whole body with the average, you know, swimsuit But the biggest problem with sunscreen is that people don't use it and they don't use enough. So you have to be very liberal with this stuff.
So the FDA saying must have UVA and UVB protection as of next summer.
Right.
No more claims of waterproof, sweatproof, all that. They say those are false. Those will be out.
That's right.
And on the SPF, that's sun protection factor, and that's what does that mean again? What's that based on? SPF is what? It's a multiple of something.
It's actually a fairly complicated formula that looks at the amount of the rays of the sun that actually lead to burning, and it's a ratio of energy absorption on that burning side of the spectrum. So, and one of the interesting things is, of course, over the last couple of years, manufacturers have got into this sort of SPF war. And if you go to your CVS, you're going to see all these products with an SPF of 100, some with 120, and they're sort of going to higher and higher and higher.
The FDA is kind of saying stop that, though not entirely so far.
That's right. They had considered actually banning everything over 50, and they stepped back. Well, because once you're at 50, you're getting 97% protection against UVB and, of course, in the future, UVA as well. And it's a somewhat of a logarithmic scale, which means that if you go from 50 to 100, you're going to go from 97% protection to about 98% protection. So you only get essentially about 1% to 2% more with considerably more medicine in the lotion. And, you know, there's a basic rule in medicine that you don't take extra doses of something, you don't take a medicine unless it has a significant benefit for you. So, you're getting an irritating a dose of a medicine without getting really any benefit for
Gardner,
it.
Gardner, let me ask you, it took 30-plus years to do this, and that's a lot of sun on a lot of skin of Americans in that time. It's a lot of people with skin cancer. It's a lot of people dying. I mean, we're talking, 68,000 a year, you report, getting a diagnosis of melanoma. What is it, 8,000, 9,000 dying a year?
Yes, sir.
I think people have assumed that what was in those bottles was as helpful as it could be. But if you compare what we've had to what, let's say, Europe has in terms of requirements, ours appear to be substantially or have been weaker.
Yes.
Where's the FDA? That's too much time, isn't it? I mean, why? Is this an industry? Have they been, bowing to the industry? Do they make a whole lot more money if they don't cover UVB and UVA thoroughly?
Well, these are all really good questions. There aren't any really good answers. Certainly, the FDA has been forced to respond to a lot of industry complaints, and frankly, the FDA has been fairly timid in this whole area. Now, part of it is that in the OTC, in the over-the-counter area of drugs, the FDA's powers are actually fairly limited. And if the FDA is going to change its oversight of the over-the-counter area, it has to go through a very laborious process that includes a lot of public comment and all this sort of stuff. And if they don't, they could be sued, and they have been sued in the past, and things have been overturned.
Well, this is about as over-the-counter as you can get, I guess. I mean, on a shelf by the pool, $3 and off you go.
It's very easy to get. So you're right. They've taken way too long to get to this spot. Now, having said that, they actually came out with a better system than they proposed back 4 years ago, with the STAR system. And I think most everybody sort of praised them to just essentially force manufacturers to give equal protection on the UVB and UVA side. So they came up with an improved system, but you're right. And if you go to Europe, also, there are 10 or 11 different kinds of sunscreen ingredients that they have that we don't. They've got 28 in total. We've got 17. And some of them people really rave about. And the FDA has been very slow to assess the safety of these new ingredients. So there are problems.
Gardner, we're going to look at that. We appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Gardner Harris, public health reporter for the New York Times there in Washington. With us right now from Cleveland, Ohio, is Dr. Jennifer Lucas, a dermatologist at the Cleveland Clinic, specializes in skin cancer surgery. Dr. Lucas, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We're going to really dig in here, but you've been telling us the skin cancer rates have been headed up. How much and why?
That's a good question in terms of why. If you look at the rates, they've been increasing for about the past 30 years. So in particular, a trend that we've seen is an increase in young women. So a number that's kind of scary is about a 3% increase since about 1992 in the ages of around 15 to 39-year-olds. And as far as why, it's probably a multifactorial reason. One, people's habits, including the use of indoor tanning beds. And two, the use of sunscreen, not having adequate protection, not applying it appropriately and doing the correct things to protect themselves from the sun. And finally, there's been some speculation about maybe the role of the ozone in having more radiation reaching the surface of the Earth.
Do you think Americans have been living in a kind of fantasy land about the protection that they are presuming comes from the sunscreen in that bottle or spray?
Sure, to a point I think they are, and I think it's challenging for us as dermatologists to recommend the best product for our patients. I mean, I routinely tell them you need a broad-spectrum sunscreen that's going to last, that it's stabilized, but the problem is how do I know for sure what to have them grab from the shelf?
You would think that after all these years, though, people would be, I mean, there have been so many warnings for such a long time. Does it look to you like these new FDA standards will help?
I'm hoping. I'm very optimistic about it. I think that we're doing a better job in America now of educating the public about the harmful or the potential harmful effects of the sun and the ability for it to cause cancer. So, yes, I do think as we educate, as we do broadcasts like this, as the people hear more about the need for that broad spectrum coverage, that hopefully they will grab for the appropriate sunscreen.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about saving our skin, maybe our lives. Here was Dr. Janet Woodcock, FDA chief, laying out new guidelines on sunscreen in Washington on Tuesday.
Under the new label, only sunscreens that pass FDA's test for protection against UVA and UVB rays can be labeled as broad spectrum.
And there's more than that. It all comes into effect next summer. Dr. Jennifer Lucas is with us, a dermatologist, joining us today from the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio. With us right now from Berkeley, California, as well, is Dara O'Rourke, Associate Professor of Environmental and Labor Policy at the University of California at Berkeley, co-founder of GoodGuide.com, website for consumers that ranks products, including sunscreen, based on all kinds of performance factors. Dara O'Rourke, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
What do you think about these new moves by the FDA? Are they putting us, right out on the leading edge of what we understand about sunscreen and what consumers need to know?
Well, I think we're just really beginning to catch up. As you mentioned earlier, there's been an arms race in the sunscreen marketing world where we've seen this super acceleration of claims on ultra and maximum and long-lasting and waterproof and sweatproof. And the FDA really way behind the curve on getting information in a form that consumers can actually understand. You basically need a chemistry degree to read the back of the label for these sunscreens, and you need a marketing degree to interpret the front of the packaging and all the claims. So there's an immense amount of confusion in the marketplace right now where people think SPF means something it doesn't. They think that they're being protected for UVA and UVB when they're not. They think that things are waterproof and they can go swimming when they really need to be reapplying very quickly. So the marketing has gotten out of hand. The FDA, I think, is really just finally catching up on some of these really outlandish claims and I think not only confusing but sometimes deceptive claims. So as Gardner mentioned, the cosmetics industry is quite poorly regulated in the U.S., and the FDA has a lot of work to catch up on getting better regulation over the chemicals that are in these products and making sure not only that they're safe and healthy, but that consumers can understand which ones really work and which ones are best for them.
Dr. Lucas, it's ironic or maybe a little bit maddening that sunscreen, which has so many health implications, would be looked at as just part of the cosmetic industry. I mean, these are amazing numbers about the amount of skin cancer in this country, its incidence and melanoma and the death rate. It hardly sounds like a cosmetic issue, Dr. Lucas.
I'm in complete agreement with you. In my opinion, sunscreen should be part of an individual's daily routine, just as they would, buckle a seatbelt in a car. You have a chance to protect yourself from the sun. So it is far more than a cosmetic issue we're dealing with.
I learned some things here I didn't know. I always thought that if you had a window pane or the glass of a car between you and the sun, you were safe. I guess you are from UVB rays, but UVA rays, which age and wrinkle and can help cause cancer, come right through glass. Is that right, Dr. Lucas?
They sure do. So it's interesting when I see people in my clinic who come in for skin cancers, depending on what side of the car they ride on, I will often see people with more skin cancer on that side of their face, their arm, their shoulder, etc. So yes, those UV rays, they definitely penetrate through glass, not only through your car, but they could come through the windows in your home as well.
We're going to look at ingredients and policy and a whole lot more. I want to get questions from our listeners. There are a lot of them here. Sabrina in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Sabrina, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What's your question?
I have a redhead, and I just can't believe how much more she burns than my other two kids. And we spend a lot of time in a pool, and I just can't figure out what will work for her. So I had gone to the pharmacist, and they said I really need to look for the ingredients titanium dioxide or zinc oxide, like the lifeguards wear.
Yep.
And I had never heard of that, and I was just curious what your experts thought about looking for that, the ingredient versus the SPF.
That's great. And you give us kind of the ultimate challenge here. A redhead child, how is it? It's a girl. How old, Sabrina?
8 years old, and she's just in the pool constantly.
Right.
And, you know, besides forcing her to come out, I just can't figure out what I can use for her because she just is getting roasted.
Let's go straight to the dermatologist. Here you go, Jennifer Lucas. It's your big challenge. An 8-year-old fair-skinned redhead in the pool a lot, and you hear the mother's question. What should she do?
And this definitely is the challenge I struggle with in what to recommend. So the reason they're recommending she grabs a titanium dioxide product is because it's what's known as a physical blocker. So the idea is that it shatters or that it doesn't allow the rays to penetrate into the skin. So I would grab for something that has an adequate SPF. And like we've been talking about, it's that broad spectrum coverage that she really needs to use. The other thing that I know this is challenging.
Okay, can I ask you right there before
you go on? Yes.
But an adequate SPF, are you saying that if it's a high enough number, and what is that number, it will necessarily have zinc or titanium oxide?
No. So the SPF number, as we've been talking about, I typically recommend in my patients at least a 30. So this is someone where I would say maybe the 50 would be better. And it doesn't, it's not based on the product, it's based on its ability to protect the skin. So there are chemical products that are found in sunscreens, as well as these physical products or these blockers. I hesitate to use the word sunblock, but the intention is that they're a physical blocker.
So what should Sabrina look for on the ingredient label then, if it's more than just the SPF number that she should pay attention to?
So it's the SPF coupled with the UVA protection. So she needs to at least look for that broad spectrum coverage. The advantage to picking a titanium dioxide product is that it's giving you that by nature of how it works, or at least in theory giving you that in how it works. And in kids, sometimes it's better tolerated because it's not as irritating to the skin. The challenge in an 8-year-old for her is going to be to apply an adequate amount and to apply it in enough time or sufficiently enough that it provides the protection that the bottle is claiming it will.
If nothing's waterproof, and that's the new thing here, Dara, how often does it need to go on, Dara O'Rourke?
So we're going to be moving from this claim of waterproof to a statement about water resistance and saying the amount of time that it's water resistant. So we're going to say water resistant 40 minutes, water resistant 80 minutes. So basically you're going to need to reapply if you're in the water that often. And so in general we say reapply every 2 hours. But if you're in the water all the time, you're going to need to reapply even more often. Now I would say to the caller's question, I think if you're looking for specific ingredients, and we have more and more consumers are concerned about specific chemicals of concern that are showing up in these products and are doing research, I would say look for a zinc oxide, a titanium dioxide, or an avobenzone are three ingredients that we find both are good as the blocking of the sun on A and B and that have low potential human health hazards related to them.
I've got questions related to those, but Dr. Lucas, let me put to you, lotion or spray? There's so many sprays out there now. What do you, as a dermatologist, which do you recommend? Does it matter?
So what I recommend in an attempt to get the a sufficient amount applied to the skin is I recommend to do the base coat before you go out, about 30 minutes before you're out in the sun, to apply a lotion or a cream so that you have a better idea. You've mentioned the golf ball for an idea to...
That's a lot of cream.
To visualize the amount you need, it is. And
Not spray?
Well, I like the spray as something for a reapplication.
Okay.
So I think it's challenging for people to reapply a sunscreen when they're sweaty, they're outside, they don't want to reapply something to their skin, and you'd have to apply that golf ball size amount again.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, spraying something on your skin is a little more convenient for the person, and I'm all about convenience if it gets them to do something to protect themselves.
So start with the lotion, maybe use the spray outside, 30 plus, maybe 50 for your 8-year-old redhead, Sabrina.
Absolutely.
And you heard the ingredients. We'll look more at those. Let me get another call here. Anne in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Anne, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, I do think it is a cosmetics issue because I'm 23 and people around me are all tan and they want to be tan and I'm fair skinned and it's not quote-unquote beautiful,
mm-hmm.
be pale. And so until it's like more of a social norm that you can have fair skin and
yep.
you don't have to be tan to like wear a skirt or something,
yep.
I don't think that any level of sunblock protection is going to do the trick because they just don't want to be, you know.
So you're saying it is a cosmetic issue and kind of a style issue and kind of a tyranny of that need for the tan.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why it's people in my age group, because young women are trying, you know, to look the best, and they say you look thinner if you're more tan, and clothes look better on you if you're more tan. So it's really about, I think, girls and their appearance.
And I really appreciate your call. That stuff is very, very powerful on human behavior. Jennifer Lucas, you might have thought after all these years that that ideal would go away, but there it is. Maybe a question out of that is, can you get a tan, any kind of tan, safely, doctor?
Any kind of tan? No. So any amount of UV exposure you get, be it outside, in a tanning bed, however you choose, is harmful to you.
And UV is what it takes to get tanned?
Correct.
So that's the poison. That's the bad stuff. So there's the fashion ideal, and you're saying, actually, there's none of that you can have safely.
Now, there is an alternative to that. I don't mind someone doing something like a spray tan or using a bronzer. The only issue with that is that I don't want them to have the false idea that that's going to provide them protection from the sun, because it mm-hmm. will not.
Wow. So there's Ann Dara looking at the social pressures here, and there's Dr. Lucas saying, you know, you just can't have a real suntan safely. If you want it, you know, paint it on, essentially.
Yes.
Dara, sorry.
Right. So, right. And this is something that with goodguide.com, we've been trying to provide this kind of information to someone like Anne that's saying, look, I want a product that does a certain thing. I want a cosmetic or a sun bronzer or whatever. We want to help them find that, as long as it is the safest, healthiest version of it, because even those products have some chemicals of concern in them now. And so both on your sunscreen and on these other sun care products, you need to basically do some research to make sure that they don't have other problematic chemicals in them.
Let me get a question here, a call from Steve in Boston. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
For hundreds of thousands of years, humans have been running around in the sun. And I'm a big believer in evolution. Why is it now that it's such a problem? We've been dying of other things maybe first, or what's changed?
That is a great question. I found myself wondering the same thing. Jennifer Lucas, Dr. Lucas, how about it? I mean, you know, humans presumably wearing less than we wear now very often have been in the sun forever. Why the problem now?
You pose a great question. And there's been some speculation, perhaps it's because they're doing a better job educating people. They're noticing things sooner. They're coming to a physician. They're not dying of another cause. But the truth is, even if you remove all of that, there still appears to be an increase in the incidence of skin cancer, and in particular melanoma. Those numbers I had given you before were actually melanoma trends, so I apologize if I had misspoken. So some of that may actually be what we're doing now. So in the past, we were getting sun exposure from being outside.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have young women who, as one of the callers mentioned, have that social pressure to look attractive. And in our society, unfortunately, attractive to many people means having a tan. So they're doing things like going into a tanning bed and getting significant amounts of UV radiation, and it eventually catches up with you.
But doctors like you are recommending tanning beds aside. That's a whole issue in itself, and it maybe clearly in the danger zone. But, you know, there's all this recommendation of 30 plus, 50 plus SPF for time in the sun, when our ancestors had no lotion and spent a lot of time in the sun.
No, you're right. And another speculation has been maybe the breakdown of the ozone layer, allowing more UV light penetration. We can speculate a lot about a lot of things. I don't have a great, great black and white answer for you, but I can tell you that the trends do continue to increase.
I want to go to Washington now, and David Andrews, senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group. It's a consumer advocacy group that has been very critical on the sunscreen front. David Andrews, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on today, Tom.
You said too little, too late on the new rules. We've talked about how it took 30 years to get here, But your group, you, have also talked about the FDA caving to industry. How? Where?
That's correct. We think the FDA has caved to industry on a number of fronts with these new sunscreen rules, and most particularly with respect to the UVA standard. We think it's relatively weak. And melanoma rates in this country have been rising faster than any other cancer. And in the time it took the FDA to work on these sunscreen rules over the past three decades, the melanoma incident rate has more than doubled. And it's, you know, my concern for melanoma has been a major motivation for my use, but I don't share the FDA's faith that all these products that will meet this new broad-spectrum standard will necessarily be protective.
How does American protection against the sun on the shelves compare to what's available or required, for that matter, across the pond in Europe?
From the information we've reviewed, it looks like this new FDA standard would be the weakest standard in the world in terms of UVA protection.
And is it really better if you've got 20 more chemicals in the sunscreen in Europe or whatever the number is? Do they really do a better job? And why wouldn't our FDA ask for those?
Well, that allows the manufacturers and the sunscreen makers to have more choices in terms of deciding which chemicals to use. There are a number of ingredients in sunscreens in Europe and other countries in the world that seem to be safe, as well as provide a broad spectrum protection that may be very beneficial for consumers. We do want to be sure that FDA does a thorough safety assessment of these products before they make it on the market. But at the same time, these products have now been for sale in other countries for over 10 years, and FDA is still dragging its feet.
Do you have evidence that sunscreen makers for the American market have had their thumb on the scales here, have been putting the brakes to this somehow?
Well, the FDA reviewed an enormous number of comments in preparing this rule. And a large number of industry comments were pressuring for a weaker UVA standard. And what this really means is that now nearly all the products on the market will meet this standard that FDA has come up with. So it really won't be pushing manufacturers to develop safer and better products that may be more protective of skin cancer and long-term skin damage.
David Andrews with the Environmental Working Group, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dara O'Rourke, could we have better? Should we expect better now?
Absolutely. I think this really is the first step towards eliminating the worst forms of market confusion and market deception. That the FDA took a step to get rid of these really, I think, claims that were leading people to think, here's a 100 SPF sunscreen. That means I can stay in the sun 100 times as long. And it's waterproof, which means I can stay out on the beach even longer. And so this may be part of it, that we've got kind of an overconfidence in the current status of these products. And so the FDA is basically taking the first step towards getting those worst claims off. Now, I think I would agree that they need to set that 50 plus as the maximum number, because that arms race on SPF continues to confuse people. There's no evidence at all that anything above 50 is really adding much value. The FDA themselves came out and said that. So I think they need to do that. But then we need to move forward on really getting, I think, moving forward on evaluating the safety of existing chemicals, sunscreen agents, and evaluating the safety of these new chemicals. Japan has 40 they use, active chemicals, Europe 28, we're still only 17. And really doing a better job of, as I think David was alluding to, motivating the industry to move forward and better and improve these products for all consumers.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about saving our skin, maybe our lives. New rules out this week on sunscreen from the FDA. We're looking at the latest on skin cancer and protection from the sun in this country. And it's not the same all over the world, as we're hearing in this hour. Dr. Jennifer Lucas joins us from the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio, specialist there in skin cancer surgery. Dara O'Rourke joins us from UC Berkeley, co-founder of GoodGuide.com. They look at all kinds of products and sunscreen in particular. We've got lots of response here. Interesting online. Valerie says she's a huge sunscreen fan. As you can see, she writes, by my pasty Facebook profile picture. But she never believed in the 70, 80, 100 SPFs. She said, use your head. How good can they be? Everybody's happy to see it talked about. Many people have experienced their own skin cancer
issues. Here's a question for you, Dr. Lucas, if I may, from Mary. She says, what about the need for vitamin D and all the diseases that occur from lack of sun exposure? How do you balance that need? And, of course, vitamin D is, I'm not sure what the word right word is, but sort of energized by the sun. How's that work, doctor?
Sure, that's a great question, and it's something people come in routinely and ask me about. So there is no recommended safe dose of UV exposure you can get to give yourself an adequate amount of vitamin D. So what we recommend as a specialty is to eat appropriate foods that are fortified, supplemented with vitamin D, and perhaps if you are low in your vitamin D, to supplement it with a vitamin supplement. The sun, yes, through a chemical reaction does actually, as you're saying, energize or change the form of vitamin D to a more effective form. But you can find this in other ways as opposed to exposing yourself to harmful carcinogens that could cause you skin cancer.
Here's another from Kirsten. She says, I was diagnosed with melanoma 3 months ago, despite using sunscreen religiously and being only 36 years old. She says, I have two red-headed, green-eyed toddlers and am very concerned about their contracting melanoma as adults. She wants to know how far in advance to put it on. You say 30 minutes, but she's got this question. Well, what about expiration on sunscreens? Do physical blockers, she asks, expire?
So you should pay attention to the expiration date on the product, because there are other, what they don't include in the active ingredients or inactive ingredients, there are other things that could potentially expire in that product. So frankly, if we all use sunscreen appropriately, it shouldn't really be left over from the year before.
Because you're using so much, you're really globbing it on. Robina in White River Junction, Vermont. Robina, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom.
What do you know?
I am a person who has melanoma. I was diagnosed a year ago with melanoma.
How did you find out, Robina?
I went in for my yearly checkup, and I have a doc who has eagle eyes. I went in for my dermatologist, and she found a suspicious mole, which was quite tiny, and she said, this is not good.
Where was it? What did it look like?
It's a good question. I asked her to photograph it before she excised it to send it for pathology. And there's no way on this planet, it was on my back, and there was no way on this planet that I would have been able to recognize it. Even with the photograph, I had to ask her to show me. And I've been under dermatology care since I was 14.
Yeah.
And there's just, it was incredibly tiny, and there was just no way. And fortunately, it was a stage one. Which is wonderful for me. If you're going to have melanoma, invasive melanoma,
that's good news.
That's
Thank heavens it was only there, because of course it can be so deadly. They think they got it, at least for now, Robina?
For now, I'm seeing every 3 months, and I will be seeing every 3 months for the rest of my life. I have other cancers now on my face, but.
How old were you when you got this news, Robina, if I may ask?
I was 47. And what was really devastating was that I had been out of the sun, actually physically removed from the sun, from the time I was 20 until I was 42. So what they think is this may be a combination of genetics and then also my previous exposure as a child.
They say childhood exposure is particularly important here. So what's your question? We have Dr. Lucas with us.
Well, this is one of the things that actually that I wanted to address that I'm not quite sure I heard addressed earlier, which has to do with the SPF numbers, 100, and all of that. Because I have received different advice from not only my dermatologist but my oncodermatologist, and that has to do with using the 100 SPF, and that's on the idea while you only receive a small percentage higher, it's that we don't put enough on. So that when you are only using a certain, let me just assure you that I do use.
I'm sure you do now. Yeah.
And I did before.
Okay.
Because I work outside.
Okay.
Is that if you're not using that full amount, the 1 ounce or the shot glass full, then you are not receiving that full 50 SPF coverage.
Let us pick it up. Whether or not you've got an advantage here. Now, the FDA, what they came out was, they weren't definitive on this. I'll come to you, Dr. Lucas, but first, Dara, they just said they're proposing that manufacturers would not be allowed to use SPF numbers higher than 50. But that's just a proposal at this point. But their point was not enough marginal gain, I guess, Dara O'Rourke.
That's right. They've asked the industry to prove to them that there are certain groups that need additional protection, or that this additional from 50 up 90, 100, 120, whatever, actually get some group some additional protection. And what Dr. Janet Woodcock said yesterday was, quote, we don't have any data to show that anything above 50 adds any value for anybody. So that was, you know, the head of FDA's drug center saying that there's no evidence that going above 50 helps. I think to really key is the message for consumers, broad spectrum, you need both UVB and UVA. And the SPF number has never covered UVA. So,
right.
So getting the 100 on SPF may still leave you totally exposed on UVA. So
but as of next summer, that should be both once you get new lotion.
Right. But I would recommend to every On Point listener as mm-hmm. of today, mm-hmm. go out and switch your sunscreens and make sure that they say UVA and UVB protection. And so I think this is I think the message that needs to be clear is broad spectrum, SPF 50, reapply regularly, and make sure you're getting the coverage you need in whatever your use case is.
Dr. Lucas, now here's Robina with a very specific, and you know, you can understand the intensity of her interest here. She's had melanoma, and she's really wondering if there's a marginal gain if she goes up to 80 or 100. You know, maybe she'd go for it, even if there are questions around it. What do you say, doctor?
You know, she and I are wondering the same thing. We are dealing with a very marginal degree of improvement. The challenging thing, though, in someone who has melanoma is I don't want them to have that marginal amount of sun exposure or UV light exposure. So I think as long as she grabs, like Dara was saying, that 50 SPF with broad spectrum coverage, reapplies and you know, at least every 2 hours, and then also remembers to wear the protective clothing. So sunscreen's great, but we should also be doing things to protect us with broad brim hats, appropriate sunglasses, protecting the skin as much as we can, long sleeve shirts, pants if you can. I know that's hard in the summertime, but protecting the skin in other ways as well.
Robina, good luck, and we appreciate your call. One more here, Anne in Boston. Anne, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm actually calling about oxybenzone, Tom. I am a fair-skinned redhead. I have two boys who are light-eyed and fair-skinned, and I've religiously followed the rules that have been talked about here
right.
for years. But I've been following the Environmental Working Group study, and folks in Europe have said for a long time that oxybenzone is a dangerous chemical that's present in most sunscreens, and that it's a sort of synthetic form of estrogen that gets absorbed into your system if you use sunscreen that has that ingredient. I wanted to check that out.
Let us pick it up, Anne. That ingredient and others. I mean, I'm looking here at Consumer Reports just last month. And Dr. Lucas, Darrell O'Rourke, they're saying oxybenzone, which is in a lot of sunscreens, and other endocrine disruptors may interfere with hormones in the body. They're saying nanoscale zinc and titanium oxides, we talked about them a little, are linked to problems, potential reproductive and developmental effects. Retinol palmitate, it's a type of topical vitamin A, an antioxidant that animal studies, this is Consumer Reports, have linked to an increased risk of skin cancer. Let's go through these one by one and start with Anne's question, Dr. Lucas. Oxybenzone, if it's in there, is it safe?
So to my knowledge, to the studies that I've seen, to so far the decades of use here in the United States, and based on what the FDA and our academy says, we haven't found these linkages, although they have been speculated and are being looked at. But to the best of my knowledge right now, I don't have a good evidence to show her that, yes, it is a problem.
What about retinol palmitate, this vitamin A type, and the animal studies with increased risk of skin cancer, Jennifer Lucas?
So retinols are a tricky thing. So they're often put into the sunscreen for anti-aging purposes. So they're not actually needed as a protective part of the sunscreen.
Okay.
And actually, we give people oral retinoid products when we're trying to prevent skin cancer. So in our transplant patients, we actually give them this orally. So yes, there have been some speculations about things, but to our knowledge, it's still a safe product. We use it in acne products, but I don't think it's necessary in the sunscreens you're using.
Darrell O'Rourke, jump in here on those two. I mean, on retinol palmitate, Consumer Report says, as a precaution, pregnant women may want to avoid sunscreens with that. But what about oxybenzone, this retinols, and then the nano ingredients, that is
right.
Nanoscale, you know, atomic scale, tiny, tiny, tiny particles in these.
Right. This, again, is where I think there's still a lot of confusion and pretty poor science here, and the U.S. is way behind the rest of the world on this. So oxybenzone is a real concern, I think, in that, first of all, we found it's detected in 96% of the U.S. population. So this is a chemical that penetrates the skin relatively easily. So it's going into our body. We're finding it in our bodies in 96% of Americans. It can trigger allergic reactions, and it's a suspected hormone disruptor. So this is one, it's in something like 60% of our sunscreens, and it's one where there are concerns about it, particularly in high concentrations. So It's one where, you know, at Good Guide, we've rated over 1,000 different sunscreens, and we look at all these ingredients. And it is unfortunate that you have to go one by one. And chemicals like oxybenzone, I think, if you are concerned about the potential health hazards, I think you probably can choose to avoid them and look for the physical sunblocks, which are minerals, not chemicals, zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, and you can actually avoid oxybenzone. There's really no reason to use it if you
don't
want
to. What about the retinyl palmitate? Now, how often does that occur in sunscreens if it's more an anti-aging thing than a sun protection thing?
Yeah, I think exactly as Jennifer said, it's showing up as an additive to these sunscreens. And that's, again, where we see there's a bunch of chemicals mixed in, sometimes the active agent, but often the inactive agent. Fragrances, I would recommend most people look for sunscreens that are fragrance-free. There's no reason to have fragrance in there.
But it smells so good at the pool, that coconut smell makes you feel like summer.
Yeah. The ocean outdoors smells good enough. I say take the fragrance out, take the insect repellent out, take the lidocaine, some of these other chemicals that are added out, and just go for, and if you're concerned about the chemicals, look for a physical sunblock. Now, and then you raise this question of the nanoscale. This, again, you know, it's really, we do not have good human health data, long-term health data on the potential human health impacts of nanoscale chemicals. And these chemicals are showing up in cosmetics all over the world. They're showing up in stain-resistant pants and wrinkle-free shirts, and all sorts of products are getting nano is one of the new hot technical innovations. But we quite frankly don't have good health evidence on what happens. So I think what the issue is titanium dioxide, when inhaled, can be a carcinogen. And so I would say on that, you want to avoid nanoscale titanium dioxide in a spray format, particularly for kids. Don't be spraying it around where your kids can be breathing it. I would put it on as a lotion or a cream and stay away from sprays that could be inhaled. So there's just, again, more questions than answers on some of these chemicals, and something where you really, if you're concerned, you need to look up the sunscreen you're currently using or look for ones that are safer and healthier.
Dr. Lucas, on the nanoscale issue, there's also the question, even if you don't breathe it in, and Dara raises the risk there, but there's been this question about whether nanoscale chemicals may be absorbed directly through the skin into the bloodstream and become sort of part of us.
Sure. So again, to our understanding, again, based on available research literature, et cetera, here in the United States, it doesn't appear to be absorbed. It appears that the stratum corneae, the outer layer of the skin, acts as a good barrier to those nanoparticles being absorbed in any substantial amount.
We've got to hope so at this point. You know, Dara, you said something that I just don't understand. You said the U.S. is way behind the rest of the world in understanding and using these things. That's just mind-boggling to me. We've got 300 million plus people here who, you know, why should we be lagging behind? I mean, this is something that's hitting millions of people every year, tens of thousands of people dying. Why should we be behind?
Yeah, no, it is an excellent question, and I think the FDA is the one you need to be asking. Why did it take them 33 years to issue this sunscreen ruling? Really, it's kind of mind-boggling that it could take, you know, the internet didn't exist when they started this, and all sorts of things have been invented and created and regulated in the time that they have been reviewing this. You know, we look at Good Guide around the world, so we're looking to regulations in Japan that are ahead of ours. We're looking to regulations in Australia. They're very advanced on sunscreen and sun protections, as you would imagine. Europe, again, way ahead of the U.S. On the regulation of chemicals and products, the U.S. has fallen really behind. We were in the lead, I would say, in the early 70s, and now most of the advanced industrial world has leapfrogged the U.S. in evaluating chemicals for their health and safety, evaluating products for their health and safety, taking the worst products off the shelves.
So what are you thinking really when you hear, sorry to bring politics in here, but when you hear politicians saying, get government out of business, just get government out of here?
I think it's crazy. In a case like this, this standard by the FDA will help the sunscreen industry. This will establish a baseline where there won't be the potential for this kind of marketing arms race and false and misleading claims. Everyone has to kind of play by the same rules, and you get kind of truth in advertising. And so that, I think, will actually benefit the whole industry to move towards those standards. That, I think, then setting a baseline for us moving forward progressively towards not only truth in advertising but better products can benefit industry and drive innovation and move us forward.
Dr. Lucas, truth in advertising here, in after all this, it strikes me that maybe the real truth is that there is no sunscreen that can really protect people here. It's, I don't know, put on heavy clothing or just don't be in the sun as much. Am I on the right beam there?
I mean, ideally, if you had no sun exposure, sure, that'd be the best way to live your life. But it's just impractical for the average mm-hmm. American. And it's impractical to ask them to wear all that clothing in certain situations. So I do still think that there are good sunscreens out there. I agree with Dara that we need to continue to look at what's in the products. We need to continue to make sure that people are getting what they think they're getting when they grab a bottle, and that there's nothing harmful added that may cause them problems. But the words I use to people is that you don't have to avoid the sun completely. You just have to be safe in the sun. Avoid the sun when it's at its highest rays during the midday, 10 to 2. Make sure you reapply that sunscreen. And if you can, wear those protective clothing. Sure, that's going to give you added sun protection.
All right, we're braced for the summer here and maybe buttressed by these new FDA steps, and we're glad for that, though it took an awfully long time. You've given us a lot to think about here at the same time about how we look at chemicals and how we keep our citizens protected compared to how they may be protected in other parts of the world. You're both really generous with your insights, and we're grateful. Dr. Jennifer Lucas at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio, thank you so much for being with us this hour, Dr. Lucas.
And thank you so much for having me.
And Dara O'Rourke, joining us today from Berkeley, California, professor there at UC Berkeley, co-founder of GoodGuide.com, where they rank products, including sunscreen. Dara O'Rourke, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.com. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Enjoy your summer. This is On Point.